drink in town with a football problem. Hey everybody, welcome into the Pivels Podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Alex.
I'm Steve.
I'm Perlin.
I'm Amy.
We're on Facebook. Make sure you check this out. Facebook.com/PifflesPodcast. We're on Twitter. You can follow us at PifflesPod. You can follow me at RealAlexD.
You can follow me at SaffonSports.
Myself at Fernie635.
And I am at CFL Hottiebowl.
And make sure you check us out on Instagram as well. Just search PifflesPod. And as always, this show brought to you by Coney Island Poutine, the best poutine in the prairies. Make sure you hop down there. They do have a 2-for-1 BOGO promotion going on right now until March 31st. Coney Island Poutine, best poutine in the prairies. Go check that out. Coming up on this week's show, CFL Week. I'm going to recap what we did at CFL Week, what we thought of it, and see where that takes us. We're going to talk the one little tidbit of rider news that happened over the last week and a half or so, and just a little bit of general CFL talk. So let's get right down to it. Mark, CFL Week was, by all accounts, an absolute hit. It was a huge success. I know we had our kind of, not doubts, but reservations on how well we thought the event would go. Going into the week, we thought it'd be like a little mini Grey Cup week. I mentioned on our Facebook page, make sure you check out my post there for my thoughts on CFL Week, that I feel like I'm half right and half wrong on what CFL Week was. So we'll get to that in a little bit here. But right off the bat, all of us were at CFL Week. What did you guys think?
Oh, I gotta say, it was an absolute success. All the events went off without a hitch. The combine was well attended, which, considering how not really exciting most of the non-one-on-one events are, that was pretty good. But it was great, start to finish. I had a lot of fun.
Anytime you bring football to Saskatchewan and Regina, it's going to be a hit. So looking back on it, I don't know why we had our reservations, but all of our expectations were pretty much blown, and it was an absolute success from the league and from the city. It was just all around great fun.
I had fun. There just weren't enough Hottie Bowl members there.
Fair point. You were just there at the wrong times.
That's true.
But CFL Week kicked off on the Tuesday, and there was media access. We were able to grab some interviews there. Make sure you check out our SoundCloud page, soundcloud.com/PifflesPod, and all the interviews are on there if you want to hear a little bit more about some of your favorite players. We wish we could have gotten more interviews, but unfortunately with our work schedules, it just didn't work out. But we do have quite a few of them in there. I think there's 20 or so interviews with some of the best CFL stars in the league. And we asked them not so traditional media questions, not so much about football, but we just got to know them a little bit better, what they like on TV, music, all that kind of good stuff. So make sure you check those out. But also there was the CFL tweet up on Tuesday night, which we helped host, and that was an absolute blast. I do have one, I don't want to say it's a negative thing to say, but I wish they would have changed it up a little bit. They scheduled it from 7 till 9, and while it did go till 9, they locked the doors to get into the little fan cave area just after 8. So unfortunately, after 8 o'clock, it kind of died out. The first hour or so, it was actually pretty well attended, and it was a lot of fun. Met a lot of pretty cool people that we see on Twitter all the time. But unfortunately, they locked the doors. And Derek Dennis, offensive lineman for the Riders, said that he was trying to make it to that night. And he couldn't because they locked the doors on him. So he wasn't able to make it into the tweet up. So I wish they would have kept the doors open until, even if it was still about 8:45, somewhere around there, that would have been okay. And then just tell everybody, hey, we're wrapping it up. But I thought it was a lot of fun for what was there.
Yeah, I think that's really the only complaint most people had, was that it wasn't long enough. It didn't run late enough. 9 o'clock on a Tuesday to Thursday night is fine, but 9 o'clock on a Friday and 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, shutting it down, that just seems like they missed out on a lot of money they could have had there.
Well, I know we went to the Pats game on Friday night, and we were walking out with 6,500 Pats fans who were all walking in the direction of the Everest Place building. Most of them went through that building, and it was, what, 10:30. Guaranteed half of them would have loved to have somewhere to pop in, have a beer, and check out a little CFL Week stuff. But, I mean, if that's the only complaint that you got, that the event itself wasn't long enough, that's pretty good. And from a tweet-up perspective, I most like being able to put some of those faces to the names of people that we personally interact with quite regularly. It was nice to actually meet them, see them outside of the Twitter element, and cheers a few beers, as it were, and and have some fun.
I think my only complaint, and maybe they didn't do it on a Friday night because the Pats game was on Friday, but I think the tweet up should have been like Thursday or Friday. It would have been better.
I think if they would have had it the Thursday night, that would have been best. Friday, they couldn't really plan it with the Pats game because that wasn't scheduled until about, you know, a week before. But
I think it should have been on Friday night.
Yeah.
In my personal and professional opinion.
They also had the bench press on Friday night, so a lot of the league office, including Max, who, you know, kind of ran the show, wouldn't have been able to attend it.
I just think more people would have come on a Friday night.
Yeah, I think the
drink at a tweet up rather than Tuesday.
Yeah, I think the Tuesday, while there's nothing wrong with having events on Tuesday, I mean, it was the first day of the week, and a lot of people were just waiting for other people to go to the events and actually see what was going on. I will give kudos, though, for the actual events that were in the Fan Fest. They had a lot of little events for your kids to go and play in, and they could do their own little combine stuff. They had a little tunnel where you put on a jersey and a helmet, and your kid can run out of the tunnel, and there's smoke going up there for it.
That was adorable, by the way.
Super cool. And
the cutest.
And it was free to do all this stuff, and they made it very family-oriented, very family-friendly, which, and that's where I was wrong about this whole, it might be a little mini Grey Cup week. Grey Cup week is just a week-long party, mostly boozing, and then there's a football game at the end. Like, it's a lot more. It's definitely an adult thing. There's a couple events you can take your kids to in the afternoon, but that's it. At night, they stay home. But this event was very, very focused at family and just getting a younger generation. And I think the league itself and the marketing team and Commissioner Jeffrey Orridge deserve props for that, because they really need to get the younger generation of fans involved in the league. And this is a great way to start.
Yeah, I really couldn't agree with you more. Maybe that's part of the reason why they planned to shut it down kind of in an earlier time frame, is to make it seem like it was more family oriented than a Grey Cup week where you're drinking and partying all week till 2 a.m.
One of the other great things about it is that there's 8 other cities begging to have it now. I've seen fans across the league saying, we want it next. There's polls all over the place, who should get it next, and they're all pretty much split down the middle where it should go next. And there's a lot of rumors out there coming back to Regina, going to Winnipeg, going to Hamilton, going to Ottawa. I think it's going to be a tough choice for the league office to pick the next host.
And I've seen a few different other theories too. One of them, which, I mean, you can't really plan this so far in advance, but all the cities with NHL teams as well, 5 of the 7 NHL teams are going to make the playoffs, it looks like. And you think anybody in Toronto right now cares about CFL? Absolutely not. You think anybody in Montreal cares about CFL? No, because their Habs are in a first place race with Ottawa. Ottawa, would they show up for CFL week? Yeah, probably. I'd like to think so, but the casual fans and everybody else are going to be more focused on the Senators, and if they have home games that week, nobody's going to go to the CFL events because they're going to go to the Sens game. Edmonton would probably be my best guess, other than Winnipeg, because we all know the Winnipeg Jets aren't going to make the playoffs next year anyway. But again, like Ferland said, I've heard rumors that Ottawa would be a great host, and I think they would be. I just think the timing would have to be a little bit earlier in the calendar year to avoid this possible NHL postseason push and just the conflict there. Winnipeg has said that they wanted to bid on 2018. Josh Smith, a friend of ours from the Podski Wee Wee podcast, said have it in Hamilton next year. Show that we can host everybody logistically for a big event like this, and then host the Grey Cup the next year, which I thought made a lot of sense.
One of the things that I've seen passed around, and I kind of agree with it, although it is maybe difficult to plan it, is having it Grey Cup in the East, CFL week in the West. Switch them back and forth every year and see kind of each side gets a location to travel to. If you're not going to one or the other, it's kind of an added bonus.
Now, my only issue with that is, was it really something that you'd want to travel for? While we all had fun and the access to the players, they said that was the big thing that they wanted to kind of push, was see your favorite stars. And they had 60 or whatever of the top CFL names out there. But is that really worth traveling and spending, you know, taking your family and dropping easily a few grand on? I'd rather save that for Grey Cup.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat there. Might be trip you know, tough to get people to travel across the country for it. But, you know, if we see this event in Calgary, Edmonton, Winnipeg, I can definitely see me, you know, as a podcast guy or as a blog guy going out specifically for the player access, because that's something we just don't get. We don't get to see that kind of full-on player availability where you're sitting down, you get 5 minutes with whatever player you kind of want to for the most part. We don't get that kind of access like the major media does. So for me, if it's nearby within that kind of traveling distance, I would absolutely go. With a casual fan?
I was just going to say, would you as a, just a normal fan?
I don't think so. But that's at no fault to the CFL. It's just there's nothing outside of that player availability. There's nothing big that can grab you. So that's where they're going to have the most trouble getting that outside.
And I feel a lot of those events, they could just have those designate each CFL home city 1 week through the regular season. Hey, let's really push week 14 in Hamilton. That's going to be their little mini CFL week. And they're going to bring, obviously you can't bring players from every team, but that you're going to have the events for the family and that kind of thing. But I just don't think that it's a travel event. And to kind of go off that, we've also heard the rumor that they're talking about possibly having it in Regina for 3 of the next 5 years. And if I were a fan of another team, I would absolutely hate that.
That would be annoying.
Why are you going back to Regina again? Like, come on, what about the rest of us? And I totally get that point. If the league's actually looking at that, and their idea behind it is, you know what, these fans will show up, this week was a success, and there was no real hype behind it before the last couple of days leading up to it, and they still showed up, we can keep building that in Saskatchewan, really pump out and show how great this event really is, and then start moving it around. I guess I get that. As somebody who lives here, obviously, I think that'd be great because we would get more access and we'd have all this kind of fun every year, and I think it'd be great. But at the same time, you're going to ruffle a lot of feathers with other teams' fans, and that's just not the best thing to do.
I think the problem with that is eventually you're going to oversaturate Saskatchewan with it. For the average fan, there wasn't that much considering.
It wasn't like a week-long event for a normal person.
Like you can only get, you know, Gene Mikowski and Chris Best and Don Narcisse's autograph so many times before it's not that special anymore, right?
To me, I think the biggest, from a fan perspective, the biggest aspect of this week wasn't so much the autograph signing and the player availability for the media and that kind of thing. It was the looseness of the players themselves. Like, we had Bo Levi Mitchell, who openly despises anything Saskatchewan, saying good things about the city of Regina and the fans themselves. We saw players in their, I don't want to call it their natural form, but basically how they are on their day-to-day life outside of football. And that's something that that I think other cities do need to see.
Well, there was, I think, Chad Owens and Enoch Mwamba in line at the subway in the Everest Center, and people recognized them and said, hey, can we get a picture in that? And like, they were obviously kind of in a hurry, waiting for their food to get there, and they took the time out to take a picture with these random fans that just recognized them waiting in line. Like, it's great for that kind of thing, just all the players casually walking around, being accessible to the fans, conversing with them just like they're regular people.
Also, on Wednesday of CFL week, there was the Hall of Fame announcement gala. Unfortunately, we weren't able to make that. But Anthony Calvillo, G. Roy Simon, Kelvin Anderson, Mike O'Shea, Brian Tauris, and Stan Schwartz all being named into the Canadian Football Hall of Fame, and they'll take their place in there in the Hall of Fame game in September. AC and G. Roy, first ballot Hall of Famers. There was absolutely no question they were getting in. So absolutely great class just based off those guys. Kelvin Anderson was a perennial 1,000-yard, and they Mike O'Shea, second most tackles of all time, I think, when he retired. And Brian Tauris, for those who don't know who he is, he is the former U of S Huskies head coach, was there for 30-plus years before he was let go just not too long ago. And, of course, Stan Schwartz of the Calgary Stampeders. So just an absolute great class, and all of them very deserving of getting into the Canadian Football Hall of Fame. So they had the gala on the Wednesday night, and they all got the tour of Mosaic Stadium, and they did the announcement and everything there. So that was a big event, and from all accounts, that was a great night as well. It was $250 a ticket to get in, so if you paid that and went in there, I hope you had a good time, and it looked like it was a lot of fun, and got to mingle around with some of the greatest players in CFL history. On Thursday, the big attraction was Warren Moon. And he was only here for, what, about an hour or so? He did a panel and then did a quick 20-minute autograph signing. So if you were one of the lucky few that actually got his autograph, good for you. Would have been great to see Warren Moon.
I actually had to give Warren Moon a lot of credit. They ended the scrum a little early, so he popped onto the stage to do autographs right away, because that lineup when he got there was ridiculous, and it was unorganized. And they got through it pretty quick, and props to him for sticking around. He probably stuck around a good 40 minutes to an hour rather than his originally scheduled 20 minutes, and made time to at least chat quickly with each fan. So kudos to him for that.
And he's always been appreciative of the CFL, gave him his start in pro football, and of course, I mean, 5 years, five Grey Cups. It doesn't really get any better than that. So great job on the CFL to get him to the event, especially on short notice, and even though they only had him there for a short time. Would have been great if for media and for fans as well, just to get a little more time with him. But you take what you can get with a pro football Hall of Famer like that who has a busy schedule, so... Good for him on showing up, and good for the CFL for getting him out here. And the big things on Friday, first off, Darian Durant did his final goodbye to Saskatchewan. We did get in on the media scrum with him on Wednesday, so make sure you check out our interview there on SoundCloud that we had with Darian Durant. But Friday was the start of the CFL Combine. And going into that, for anybody like who really didn't pay attention to what the NFL Combine is, it's a lot of individual tests for players to see how they measure up, basically just to get their measurables. Helps with the draft, and that carried over into Saturday morning, and we were able to check out the Saturday events. I thought it was pretty cool. The individual drills, where you see the guys run the 40, they're all right. O-line doing their little workout drills, whatever, not a big deal. But then you got to the one-on-ones, which was the really cool thing, because you see how these guys stack up against each other. And it really does separate the top tier of players that are going to be drafted this year from the next tier and the bottom tier. And I thought that was pretty cool.
I was actually kind of shocked. The thing I was most looking forward to being having seen combines in the past, I was looking forward to the 40. But it was boring. Like, there was no hoopla. There was no kind of interaction with the fans at all on it, other than when a Husky or Ram or Thunder member of the draft class was doing their drills. You didn't really hear anything from anybody. I think that's one thing that the CFL could work on, if they had one thing, is try and make the combine a little bit more fan friendly. Maybe announce the times or do something like that. But the one-on-ones, that was incredible to watch. The actual, you could see players separate themselves. The biggest one that stood out to me was Johnny Augustine. I mean, his numbers throughout the individual drills didn't jump off the page to me, but the moment you put him in pass protection or in one-on-ones versus a linebacker for catching the ball, he was in a league of his own.
Yeah, there were a few players that really impressed during the one-on-ones, and a few that they looked awful and they did nothing to help their case in the draft. Just incredible to see how that actually went down.
And the one thing I found interesting, and we had the chance to sit in with Chris Jones on his scrum, and the one thing that I personally found interesting with the combine is how different coaches look at the combine as a measuring stick. Jones, for instance, said he doesn't really use the individual numbers at all. He doesn't care if he's getting a fast guy or a guy who can run the shuttle drill better than anybody. That doesn't matter to him. All he was looking at was the one-on-ones. Whereas other coaches specifically look at those 40 times and the bench press as a measuring stick.
Well, and I feel those are important, but those are something that you can just see the numbers and you know what you got. Guy runs a 4.640. Okay, that's a 4.640. But you say one guy beat an O-lineman, absolutely dominated on the one-on-one drills. Well, is that because the D-linemen weren't any good? Was it because that O-lineman is that much better? You actually got that one-on-one aspect of it where you could see he's going up against, you know, this highly ranked defensive tackle and just shove him to the ground every play. Like, that's a good-looking offensive lineman, and you can't measure that. You can't just hear about that or see the number. That's something that you actually have to watch. You can see their footwork and everything like that. So the one-on-ones were the big thing, at least to me, of the CFL Combine. But also, wanted to keep it a little bit local in the Combine here. So we did get interviews with a few of the local guys that participated, so we're going to play those for you right now. First up, we got Evan Johnson, of the U of S Huskies. He's on the O-line.
All right, we're here with Evan Johnson of the Saskatchewan Huskies. Evan, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, you're welcome. Happy to be here.
So you're here with CFL Week, the Combine. First day of testing, or I guess second day of testing in the morning here. How do you think the morning went for you?
I think it went well. You know, had some strong numbers to show, and yeah, feeling good about it.
What have you thought of CFL Week so far?
Well, I think it's a great thing. Obviously, I've only been around for the combine part of it, but you know, I think it's a great idea and really promote the CFL and the players and really connect with the fans. So I think it's awesome.
Now, with this event being held in Saskatchewan, the combine specifically, how did it help having hometown fans, well, kind of hometown fans for you, kind of rooting you on as the event went through?
Yeah, I mean, that was huge. It's really nice to have so much support. You know, my coaches are able to make it down, friends and family. And so it's really awesome having them all in the fans cheering me on.
Prediction time, what do you think you're going to be drafted at? What round?
You know, that's a really hard question to answer. There's so many variables that go into it. And, you know, as far as we've gotten, that's all testing. It's just numbers. And they want football players, not good testers. And so I got to show myself here this afternoon, too. So as far as the draft goes, there's a lot of variables and depends on what teams want as well. So,
What do you think you can bring to a CFL franchise if you do make it there?
Yeah, strong work ethic. You know, I like to work hard and battle and, you know, really give my all every play and hopefully coaches see that.
Well, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks so much.
That was Evan Johnson of the U of S Huskies. And let's talk to another O-lineman, this one of the U of R. This was Jeremy Svir.
We're here this morning with Jeremy Svir of the Regina Rams. Thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So right off the bat, you've gone through the first morning or the second morning of the second day here. How do you think it's gone for you so far?
It's a pretty good day for me, you know. Tested well yesterday, tested well today. I mean, could have ran the all drill a little better, but other than that, it's a pretty good day.
What do you think you can bring to a CFL team?
I think I'm a good worker. You know, I put the time in to mentally and physically prepare myself for the season, for every game. And, you know, I'm a battler. You know, I like to grind, so it's probably a big thing that teams look for in O-linemen. So.
Have you gone through the team interviews yet at this point?
Yeah, we're done all team interviews now.
So. What's the weirdest question that you've gotten to date? Or have you got any that kind of stand out like that?
No, I haven't really had any that stand out. People always ask me about my background and like how I came to football, because that's kind of the only thing that's really, really different about me. So.
Last question here for you. From a CFL Week perspective, how did it help having, you know, the hometown Regina fans rooting you on as you were going through testing?
Oh, it was nice, you know, having friends and family and teammates and just everyone here that knows you. It's good, you know. You get that little extra boost and you get that little extra motivation to perform well, you know, to show everyone like this is kind of our city, like Regina boys. You know, we're trying to represent our town proud, and we're just trying to put on a good show for everyone.
Well, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Evan.
And finally, we also talked to Mitchell Picton of the U of R Rams, wide receiver, had a hell of a college career, and he's going to make a very solid Canadian wide receiver in the CFL. Let's hear from him.
We're here with Mitchell Picton of the Regina Rams. Mitchell, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So right off the bat, what do you think of your time with the CFL Combine? How did it go for you so far?
It's been fun so far. I mean, there's a ton of great athletes here. This is kind of the best of the best. So it's been a lot of fun to compete, and it's a great thing to be a part of.
Did you get interviewed by any of the teams, and if so, who?
Yeah, I got interviewed by a few teams. I think I had six interviews, but yeah, it was good. All the interviews were good, and they were coaches were easy to talk to. So.
Is there any particular event for you so far that stood out over the first 2 days?
I thought my 40 today was really good. My other tests, they were okay, but not my greatest times. But yeah, the 40, I was happy with that, and relative to the day, I thought I put down a good time.
Current or former CFL, is there anyone that you kind of model your game after?
I'd say guys like Jason Claremont, Andy Fantuz, Chris Getzloff, those kind of guys, big Canadian slot backs that have had long, successful careers, really, really reliable guys in the league, and yeah, those are some guys that I try to model my game after.
How did it feel to have the hometown crowd feel cheering you on at a combine event like this? Does that help you during the events?
Yeah, you're not thinking about it too much during the events, but it's definitely cool. My whole family's here. A bunch of my team, I think like half of the rounds are here. So yeah, it's pretty cool to have everybody here cheering me on and supporting me. So it's been nice.
All right, well, that's it. Thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
That was Mitchell Picton of the U of R Rams wide receiver there. And it'll be interesting to see where these guys get drafted in early May when the CFL hosts their draft. And who knows, maybe we'll see one of them in green and white.
Johnny Augustine.
Yeah, he's not going to be around when we're picking. And I'm not talking about the first overall pick. We're going to, I think in the next episode or two, we're going to be focusing a little bit more on the draft and looking at where the Riders really need to pick. I wish I knew names a little bit better and followed U Sports a little bit closer and college football, but it's not going to be a running back that we're taking high. That's for sure.
Better not be.
But that was kind of the wrap on CFL week. I originally gave it a 7.5 out of 10. I bumped that up to, what did I say, 8.5? I thought it was, overall, it was a great week, especially for a first one. Nobody really knew exactly what was going to happen, and I think the league knocked it out of the park. Obviously, there's things that they could do a little bit better. If they had live music or something Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights after 9 o'clock when the fan cave ended, that's when they should really start the party. And have a live, even just a local band, just anything, just have a live band, have a little cabaret style, get more people out there, because even though this weekend, the CFL week was not a cash cow, they could have easily made it a cash cow, and that would probably be the smarter thing to do. That's the only real problem I had with anything, but even then, I go to sleep at 9 o'clock most nights anyway, so for everything to be over at 9 o'clock was A-okay with me. So I gave it an 8.5 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm right in that same ballpark, 8.5 out of 10. The one thing they can't change, they need to keep it fan-friendly or family-friendly. That was a great decision by the league and the people who put this on, getting that younger generation involved. But like you said, they need to flick a switch later in the evening and make it a little bit of both. Get people going out at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night and having a good time. But there really weren't... There's really nothing I could say I would change, especially for a first go around. The league did a great job of putting everything together, and kudos to all of them on their hard work.
I just have one thing really quick that I would change, and that's have some of the players media availability a little bit later in the day, because we missed out on a lot, which was a shame because that's when all the Riders were, and they just had a lot of names that I would love to speak to early in the morning, but we just weren't able to get that. But that's just a me being greedy thing.
I'm kind of right in the same ballpark, that 8.5 area. Keep the fan cave open a little bit later, or change it up a little so that it's a bit more adult friendly or less family friendly. The combine was great. The passing showcase, I didn't really enjoy it that much. It was basically just watching a game of flag football, but other than that, it was a great event for a first go around. The amount of time and money and effort that the whole CFL office put into it. Keep in mind that the CFL office doesn't actually have that many employees, so to consider that they put this all on and planned it all out in a matter of months, it just kudos to the league for getting what they did and having it be this much of a success.
I was gonna give it an 8.5, but I don't want to be the same as everybody else, so I'll give it an 8.75.
You would,
just to be different. Things that I would change, just more things like around the, what was the fan zone?
Fan fest.
More like adulty things, not necessarily like drinking type things, just more things that are geared towards adults. Also, even though it was like a free thing and it wasn't there to make money, they could have had more money spending opportunities, like more food, like a little CFL merchandise tent. I know they had the Rider store, but that was the Rider store little tent. They could have had CFL merchandise, like more money spending opportunities, I think.
That's a great point, having CFL merchandise, because I would have loved to pick up a generic CFL flag with just the CFL logo on it, or a t-shirt or something like that, and take that to all the players, especially from all the other teams, to get them to sign when
they don't
want to
sign a Rider shirt.
Yeah, and a lot of them did, just, I mean, because, and they're going to be nice about it, but really, yeah, they don't care about signing your Dressler jersey. They really don't. And if you would have just taken a CFL hat or a t-shirt, they would have signed that and probably wouldn't take, I'm sure they didn't take offense to it, but they'd have less of an issue doing
there was,
that.
So there was just missed opportunities on where they could have made more money.
That actually came up for me right after the Warren Moon. Right after the Warren Moon signing, I ran into Mike Riley and thought a certain Edmonton podcaster would enjoy having that autograph, and I had nothing for him to sign except the map of the fan fest. So I just gave that to Mike and said, here, can you sign this for a buddy that I gotta mail this to in Edmonton? And he was all right with it, but it would have been nicer if it was something a little bit more, you know, special, like not just a map of the Evraz Center with all the special places that the fan fest had.
Yeah. And they didn't even necessarily only have to have like CFL branded stuff. They could have had like a little bit from every team, because in theory and ideally CFL week, there should be fan representation from every team, right?
Well, and how many casual fans would go and buy even if they had it for, you know, $15, a shirt, an Edmonton Eskimo shirt, and you go to the one, because they all had them in groups for the most part, and you can go and get the three Eskimo players that were there. That'd still be kind of a cool keepsake to have.
I agree with you, Amy. I think the only shirt or jersey I didn't see this week was a Red Blacks something.
Yeah.
All the other teams were represented.
Everybody else was represented. Represented.
But they're a model franchise.
Props to the fans that actually made the trek out to Regina for that. I know there wasn't a lot of travel. A lot of people, again, just kind of seeing what the whole event was about first before they decided, you know, maybe next year they'll travel. So props to the ones that did make it out. So good for you guys. And also a couple things I guess we forgot to mention here. One thing I thought was really cool about the Fan Fest was that they had the Hall of Fame display, and Eddie Davis and Don Narcisse were there when we were there, and so they had a couple of the pieces from the Hall of Fame. They had a sealed box that had, what, 40 Grey Cup rings in it that you could take a look at. I thought that was really cool, because you see a lot of Grey Cup rings that you've never seen before, dating back 40 years, and just how much they've changed. So that was really cool. And one thing that, and this is what I love about the CFL, and you'll never ever see it in the NFL, the Grey Cup was just sitting there out in the open, all by itself, begging for you to take your picture with it and grab it and hug it and everything. And
oh, I did.
And you would never see that with the Vince Lombardi trophy in the NFL. You would never see that. They're all in glass cases in the team headquarters after they win it, and that's the only time you ever see a Super Bowl trophy. And meanwhile, up here, it's just sitting there waiting for you to go take your picture of it, and there's no one really paying attention to it. They had the keeper of the cup that was there, but he was just kind of off to the side and not really worrying about it. He was taking your picture with it.
He was there encouraging you to go take your picture with it.
Yeah, and that's something that you
touch
never...
Touch it, give it a hug.
Yeah, and that's so cool. And I love the NFL, but that's something you will never, ever see there. And that's what I think makes our game a little bit more authentic. It's just a real thing. It's cool, and I thought that was a great idea as well. And just in general, to wrap it up on CFL week, props to the CFL for A, thinking of this idea and this event. You guys knocked it out of the park. All your hard work did not go unnoticed. So to the whole CFL team, Commissioner Orridge, Paulo Senra for setting everything up, Lucas Barrett, Brody Lawson, Max Rosenberg, and everybody else associated with the CFL, great job. Can't wait for it next year and to find out more about where it's going to be and if there's going to be any changes.
And for anyone over the past year or two that's been saying, name one thing that Jeffrey Orridge has done good for the league, you're now going to have to ask, name two things Jeffrey Orridge has done well for the league, because CFL week is a huge success and it's going to keep going.
Yeah, I saw it was a tweet, I forget who it was by, but there was something like 1,300 across Canada, 1,300 articles written about CFL week, and over how many million worldwide impressions on this, and it was 200 million, like absolutely incredible. So people were talking about CFL week when it was here, so it's good to get interest in the CFL in the middle of March when the interest in the CFL is typically low because hockey's revving up and baseball's about to start up. So good for the CFL for getting out there, and Wally Buono said it as well too, great event. we need to make the CFL a 12-month a year league. And this is one step in making that a 12-month a year league.
The actual numbers were 1,489 articles and 351 million global impressions.
That's incredible. In March, when people typically don't care about the CFL. And that's why having it in Regina was such, I don't want to say they had a choice, but they really had no choice to have it here in, I guess, the heartbeat of the CFL, where fans care about football 24/7, 365. You don't get that in all the other cities by other than just the hardcore fans. Our casual fans, they're thinking about it all the time. And it was a great, great kickoff to something that I hope lasts a really long time. And one thing that actually came about is going to be our good guy of the week. Tell me something good.
Tell me that you love me, yeah. So this week's good guy of the week is actually a TSN employee, Marshall Ferguson. Sunday evening, I guess just before he was about to catch his flight out, he posted a tweet. I have a six-pack of beer here. It was Prairie Bard, Graham Dillette's beer. Tweeted out that he had this six-pack available. If anybody wanted it, just reply. The first person that replied got it. And he would leave it at the front desk of his hotel, and you just pick it up. So 45 minutes after he tweeted this, and I don't know how a six-pack of beer survived for 45 minutes in Saskatchewan. This just blew my mind. I tweeted back at him and said, I can be there in 15 minutes if it's still there. And he said, yep, your name's at the front desk. Come pick it up. So for this episode and our next episode, we are beer sponsored by Marshall Ferguson. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Marshall.
Thanks, Marshall.
All right, now moving on, we have a couple other things just to get to really quick before we finish up here. We do have the smallest little bit of Rider news to get to. Greg Newman, safety, Canadian defensive back, retired.
He got attracted by a job outside of football that can pay him way more. I don't blame him.
I think he was in tough to make the team anyway coming out of this year with, Marc Olivier Briette and then Jeff Hecht behind him and Tavon Campbell. So it would have been tough for him to make the team as just a special teamer, and he's been in the tub the last couple of years, and you don't make the club in the tub. So get more money working outside of football. Definitely can't blame him for that.
Thanks for your time as a Rider.
Yeah, he's got the Grey Cup championship from 2013, and he was an integral part. He was great on special teams then and filled in on defense, so... And one other CFL tidbit to get to. It was rumored over the weekend of CFL week, but it finally happened on Monday here. Javon Olafioye, offensive lineman for the BC Lions, formerly of the BC Lions, has been traded to Montreal in exchange for David Foucault and international offensive lineman Vincent Brown. Really quick on that. I know Kavis Reed really wants to make an impression his first year as a GM. I mean, kudos for him for getting one of the best offensive tackles in the league. In Olafioye, he's in that win now, and they're built to win right now, but this is going to come with consequences, and that's going to happen a couple years down the road when they have no Canadian talent left.
When I saw the trade come across the boards, I was actually thinking that like most, Montreal got destroyed in this trade, giving up a NFL caliber, almost NFL caliber offensive lineman. But the more I think about it, Montreal got a proven all-star O-lineman for a guy who is going to come in at high cost and hasn't proven himself yet. It's not as bad a trade as it seems, but while he's planning for the future, he's planning that potential, because if Foucault is anything like he's shown, he's worth that trade, especially for a guy that Wally was probably going to cut if no trade happened.
Olafioye is only 28 years old still, but Foucault is younger, he's Canadian. Kavis just opened up Wally's ratio huge with this trade. I think it would have been better to sign Foucault and use him as your tackle.
And BC, Wally Buono said that they needed to cut salary, and they definitely did that. And especially when they went out and spent a lot of money in free agency. And Montreal was rumored to be way over the cap anyway, and they're adding more salary. There's going to be, again, I said consequences, poking fun at Kavis Reed, but there actually is going to be consequences from this, because who's going to get the axe in Montreal? You know, there's going to be a bigger name player that's going to get cut because of this. And is it worth it if they think they're going to win this year? And we were talking earlier outside the studio, and I said that they were only a game and a half out of first place last year. So they are, and that was with how many different quarterbacks. This year they have their starter in Darian Durant, and they're in that win now mode. So right now, good trade, but long term, BC won this one for sure, I think. That's going to wrap it up for us this week here on the Pivots Podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate that. Make sure you check out our Twitter feed at Pivots Pod. You can follow me at RealAlexD.
You can follow me at Saffon Sports.
Myself at Fernie635.
And I am at CFL Hottie Bowl.
Make sure you like us on Facebook, facebook.com/PivotsPodcast. And find us on Instagram, just search Pivots Pod. Make sure you check out our SoundCloud page, soundcloud.com/PivotsPod. There, like we mentioned earlier, you're going to get interviews from guys like SJ Green, Stefan Logan, Jonathan Jennings, Bear Woods. Bear Woods is my favorite interview of the week. I want to sit and have a drink with him and just talk. Not about football, but just about life. He just seems like a great guy.
I want to be friends with him.
Yeah.
Would you have a beer and a slaw dog with him?
Yep.
Yeah. Listen to that. Find out exactly what a slaw dog was. I thought it was a little more exciting than it actually is. But make sure you check out that interview. Ted Laurent, Jeff Fuller, and like the list goes on and on. Adarius Bowman was another great interview. He was one of my favorites. That guy just had a giant smile on his face while we were interviewing him the whole time. Just he loved doing that kind of thing. Chris Williams, Solomon Elamamian was also a good one. And
Elamamian.
That's right. Andrew Harris, John White, Chris Rainey. The list goes on. Like we talked to a lot of stars. And so make sure you check that out. That's, again, soundcloud.com/PifflesPod. Until next week, this has been the Piffles Podcast, brought to you by Coney Island Poutine Cafe in Regina, the best poutine in the prairies. Thanks for joining us.